There, beginning on the Mishnah, on the top of Lamed Amud Aleph, the Mishnah is continuing our issues with regard to people that are chashud, that we have suspicions about their keeping a mitzvot, and it says here, a chashud ala shvit, eno chashud ala masrot. Someone who is suspect with regards to the issues of shvit, in the previous Mishnah, Rashi described chashud ala shvit as someone who is chashud lizroa, to plant on shvit, olasud skorav svichim, or he transacts. He does commercial transactions with regards to Perot Shvit, which is problematic. There are other issues with regards to Shvit, including Shamur, which is that you protect, you are not mafkir, the produce that is growing on your fields, which could be a problem, and maybe even according to the Balei Tosafot is a sur. There's also the issue of after Kalal HaChayam in HaSadeh, after it's no longer available in the field, where there's a Shat HaBi'ur for the Shvit, the person keeps utilizing those items, or does not perform bi'ur, then that's also an issue with regards to shvi'id. So there are a number of factors that a person could be chashud ala shvi'id, but if he is chashud ala shvi'id, does not automatically mean that he is chashud ala masrot. From the context of the Gemara, we'll see that here the clear reference of masrot is to ma'aser sheni. It's not with regards to truma, it's not with regards to regular ma'aser rishon. First of all, tevel, where you don't have those items removed from it, is a problem which involves a chiyuv mita bidei shemayim, which people are more afraid of. There is the issue of trumat maser that's associated with maser rishon. And there are also problems of gezel. All these problems don't exist with regards to maser sheni. So it's taken off of tevel. There's no chiyuv mita bidei shemayim. There's no gezel because it belongs to the balim. The real issue comes up with areas of halacha where people justify their behavior and feel like they could take shortcuts, or it's just a chumra ba'alma. One of those would be ma'aser sheni. Ma'aser sheni is something that belongs to the balim, belongs to the owners, in a sense. They just have to eat it up in Yerushalayim. So people would be choshud al ma'aser sheni, seemingly that they would not take it up to Yerushalayim in order to eat it in Yerushalayim. What's the difference? It's mine anyway. If I don't take it to Yerushalayim, if I eat it here, what's the big deal? So that's an area of halacha where they would justify their position, justify the practice, even though, of course, it's not correct. So for that reason, it's much more kal with regards to people, and that's why the ma'aser what's being made here is ma'aser sheni and not ma'aser generically. Now, Tosafot over here mentions that from here, the Rabbeinu Tam wanted to conclude that anytime the Gemara associates ma'aser with shvi'it, the ma'aser that they're speaking about is ma'aser sheni, as seems to be the case here in our Mishnah and in our Gemara. So Rabbeinu Tam says that the problem here is that he's chashud to sell ma'aser sheni like chulin. That's what we're worried about here. That's what it means, chashud ala ma'aser sheni. Rashi seems to indicate is that he's chashud not to take off the ma'aser sheni at all. And the other possibility is that chashud ala ma'aser sheni is that he doesn't take ma'aser sheni up to Yerushalayim. He just eats it in the gvulin, which would be somewhat akin to what Rabbeinu Tam says over here, that he is chashud to treat ma'aser sheni like chulin. So the person is chashud ala shvit, Eino chashud al masrot, is not chashud on ma'aser sheni, which Rashi says that doesn't necessarily mean that he is believed, because we have another issue with regards to trumot masrot, which is an Am HaAretz. Now we believe that Rov Am HaAretz take off trumot masrot, but we have an issue of demai. That's what Rashi says in the Mishnah, Ve'ein tzrichim la'aser vadai. You don't have to take off the masrot as if it was vadai, meaning that if he's chashud al masrot, you have to take it off because it's even beyond a safek anymore. This is a person who doesn't deal with this mitzvah, doesn't do this mitzvah, then you'd have to take it off vadai, even though technically it's a safek of tevel. But still, it's a safek that has serious ramifications and is in all likelihood something you need to rectify, versus the case where he's not chashula masrot, where he's classified as a namaretz, then his demai, regular demai, you have to take off the trumot masrot, but there's certain kulot that apply. So over here, there's a fundamental difference between someone who's chashud and someone who's an Am HaAretz. Now, Am HaAretz, the assumption is that Rov Am HaAretz take off trumot masrot, but they have certain problems with that, issues with that, sometimes they don't. So because of that, we, misafek, deal with it, and it has all the rules of demai. The other enemy is chashud al masrot. It's a much more serious issue. Rashi calls it that it is vadai. Others call it a safek, but a serious safek that we have to deal with, and it has much more stringent requirements with regards to taking off trumat masrot if he's chashud ala masrot. Chashud ala masrot, someone is chashud on ma'aser sheni, eino chashud ala shvit. He's not then chashud ala shvit. So it seems from the Mishnah that the issues are independent. You could be chashud, you could be suspect with regards to an item, which is that we know that you're a wanton violator when it comes to shvit or maaser sheni. But just because you are a violator on one doesn't mean you're violating the other. They're all decompartmentalized. A chashud alzeh ve'alzeh, someone who does not keep either of these, not maaser sheni, not shvit, chashud al ta'arot. Then that person is not believed with regards to ta'arot. Now ta'arot has many, many different manifestations, meaning that ta'arot are things that could be midoraita. Rashi over here clearly says that the ta'arot that we're speaking about over here are ta'arot midrabanan. These are ta'arot that are kept only on a rabbinical level, which is things like chulin al-tarata truma, chulin al-tarata kodesh. And these are items where there's stringencies kept by individuals with regards to tuma and ta'ara. So it's rabbinic in nature. So if a person is chashud on both of these items, then there's certainly chashud ala ta'arot. But vice versa would not be true. V'yeshu chashud ala ta'arot, person could be questionable about his practices with regards to ta'arot, v'enu chashud lo'azeh v'lo'azeh. But that doesn't mean that we suspect that he is violating shvi'it or ma'aser sheni, ze'akla. Ha'chashud ala davar lo'dono v'lo me'ido. This is the principle. Any person who is suspect with regards to a matter, lo dano v'lo me'ido, you do not allow him to adjudicate with regards to this, v'lo me'ido, and we don't allow him to be an aid with regards to this. What the Mishnah is saying is, not only is he not believed with regards to himself, which is, of course, the situation because he suspect wantonly violate the Isur, but he's also not Naman with regards to other people. We don't allow him to come and testify with regards to someone else who is in this practice, because he clearly doesn't put any importance on these particular practices. So if he doesn't keep shvi'it, then he can't come and testify as to someone else's observance of the dinim of shvi'it. And similarly with ma'aser. Once you are a violator, we assume that you don't have any regard for that law, and therefore you can't be an adjudicator or a testifier, a witness with regards to those matters. Outside of those matters, then you're fine. It's just clearly an issue with regards to these matters. We'll see in the upcoming Mishnah that there is a dissenting opinion that doesn't agree with this and believes that you are believed with regards to these matters when you're testifying about someone else. That when it comes to this issue of believability, that when it comes to yourself, people are suspect because they get benefit. They get hanah from it. So when it comes to hanah, then they're suspect for violating it. When it comes to speaking about other people where they get no hanah from it, could be that they are believable in those situations because they're not getting a benefit. They have no yetzer hara to violate that issue, and they're not going to get any benefit for it. What the Gemara calls, an adam chata v'lo lo. Person doesn't sin when it doesn't benefit himself, when it doesn't accrue something beneficial to himself, and therefore he might be believed in these situations. So my time up. What is the reason that a person who's chashud al shvi'it is not chashud al ma'aser or vice versa? The reason is because it has to do with not the objective standing of the mitzvah, it has to do with the subjective standing of the mitzvah or the perspective of people with regards to these mitzvot. And that is shvi'it lo ba'i choma. Shvi'it doesn't require you to take it up to Yerushalayim to be eaten in Yerushalayim. Ma'aser, given to ba'i choma, chamir le. Ma'aser sheni, since it needs to be taken up to Yerushalayim, people consider it to be a much more stringent law. Meaning that some of what we spoke about before, it's a tircha, it's a difficulty to take it up to Yerushalayim, take the ma'aser sheni, but that also indicates to the individual that it's a higher level of kedusha that's associated with ma'aser sheni. So in the eyes of people, shvi'it is just kedusha, but it's whatever, it's some low form of kedusha, we don't have to worry about it. Ma'aser sheni, which is kadosh, and it needs to be taken up to Yerushalayim, so in the perspective of this individual, he's willing to violate shvi'it, but that doesn't mean he's willing to violate ma'aser sheni. He sees ma'aser sheni being on an elevated status of kedusha, and so just because you're chashud al shvi'it doesn't mean you're chashud on ma'aser sheni. But again, that's not an objective view of whether shvi'it or ma'aser sheni is more chamur. Just in his mind, he looks at it or has a perspective like this because of the fact that ma'aser sheni needs to be taken up to Yerushalayim. To him, it's more chamur. That's why if he's suspect with regards to shvi'it, he's not necessarily suspect with regards to ma'aser sheni. And vice versa. Chashud al ma'aser, my daima, ma'aser itle pijon. People think of ma'aser sheni as being a lighter form of kedusha because you can redeem it. Shvi'it, even the mitatsrele, velele pijon. Shvi'it, which is asur, it's not really asur, it has kedusha associated with it, which cannot be detached from the item itself, there's no pidyon, there's no redemption of it, chamirle. In that person's mind, he thinks of it as being a much more chamor issue. So even though he's willing to violate the issues of Maaser Sheni, because he sees Maaser Sheni as being a light mitzvah, because of the fact that you can redeem it. How stringent or how important could the Kedushat Maaser Sheni be if you can remove it, and you can take it off, and you can put it on the money? So for that reason, he doesn't care so much about Maaser Sheni. On the other hand, when it comes to Shvi'it, where you can't get rid of the Kedushah, he takes that much more seriously. Again, it's not an objective fact as to whether it is or isn't more chamor. It's just in the perspective of this individual, how could he justify to himself violating Maaser Sheni and not violating Shvi'it? So there is a logic that could be dictated in both these situations, where a person would violate one and not the other, because in his mind he can see a difference or creates a difference between them. Chashud al zeh v'al zeh. This individual is chashud on both of these items. Then he's chashud al ha'tarot. The reason for that is, came into chashida d'oraita, kol shekein ha'derabonon. So this is what we spoke about in the Mishnah, that the issues of Shvi'it, the issues of Maaser Sheni, are issues d'oraita. The ta'arot that we're speaking about in the Mishnah, and that's what I noted, Rashi says here, ha'tarot d'rabonon inu. Shehei adam ochel chulin b'ta'ara. It's the person who's keeping chulin b'ta'ara. These are issues midirabanan. If a person doesn't care about laws min ha'Torah, how is he going to care about laws midirabanan? It's a kal v'chomer. So that kal v'chomer tells us that when you violate laws min ha'Torah, then unlikely you're also going to violate laws midirabanan. V'yesh chashud ha'tarot. So again, here in the reverse, where he's chashud ha'tarot doesn't mean he's chashud ha'shvi'it and on Maaser Sheni, my time, oh, what's the reason there? He had the Rabbanan chashid, had the right to low chashid. Again, this person may not worry about issues mid the Rabbanan. He says the rabbis have this crazy thing, this Qumrah about Tahara. So he doesn't follow those issues with regards to Tahara. But that doesn't mean he's going to violate Yisurim Doraita. So just because he's violating Tarot doesn't mean he's violating Shvi'it and Maaser Sheni. And that's why he's Neman with regards to those, even though he's not Neman with regards to the Tarot. Biramini, is this really true? Neman ala Tarot, Neman ala Shvi'it. Someone who is trustworthy with regards to Tarot is trustworthy with regards to Shvi'it. Now so far that matches what we said, because if a person's makbid on Dinei Derabanan like Tarot, which are Chumrot, then certainly he's going to keep basic laws like Shvi'it, which are Dinei Doraita. Gemara then makes a logical extension, which is not logical, which is HaChashid Chashid. Gemara says, well, that means if you are Chashud ala Tarot, then you are chashud ala shvi'it. That is not necessarily logical. Just because when you are trusted with regards to A, you're trusted with regards to B, doesn't mean if you're not trusted by A, then you're not trusted by B. That's not necessarily true. The Gemara makes that extension, Tosafot claims, because otherwise there's no chiddush over here. To say the fact that if a person's neman ha'tarot, he's neman ha'shvi'it, that's an obvious statement. You don't need the breita to tell you that. So it must be that the Brayta is coming to teach you some other information. That other information must be the diuk, which is, if you're chashud al ha'tarot, then you're chashud al ha'shvi'it, which is against what we said before. Because we said before, a person could violate tarot, because they're abonon, and then he's not suspect with regards to shvi'it, because that's a doraita. Yet the Brayta over here is implying that if he was chashud al ha'tarot, he would be chashud ha'shvi'it. Even though it's a derabonon that he's chashud on, we still would be suspect with regards to his behavior surrounding shvi'it, which is against what we said until now. The other way to look at the logic is the fact that it says, neman al tarot, neman al shvi'it. Had it been that it was the other way around, if you were chashud al tarot, you would be neman al shvi'it, then that would have been the bigger chiddush. That's the bigger chiddush. That's what the Brayta should have written. The fact that it didn't write that shows you that that's probably not true. And that's why the Gemara came to the conclusion that if you're chashud al tarot, you're chashud al shvi'it. So how do I reconcile between this Brayta and that which we see in our Mishnah? So Amar Rabbi Eloi, here's the first answer. Matnitin kishreinu chenuheg b'tzina b'toch b'ito. Eino chanami, we have a belief that if a person's chashud on one thing, he's chashud on the other thing. So then why in our Mishnah do we say if he's chashud al tarot, he's not chashud al shvi'it, he's not chashud al maaser sheni? That's because we see that in his house, he practices these items. We see that when he's not out in public, he keeps shvi'it, he keeps maaser sheni. We have other evidence which indicates that he's keeping it. Now, if he kept it in public, we would think that he's just doing it to save face. So that doesn't prove anything about his real integrity with regards to this mitzvah. The fact that we see him keeping it in private shows you that he really cares about it, he really means to do it. So therefore, our Mishnah, the case in our Mishnah, which should agree with the Braita, and it says, the Braita says, if you're chashud in one thing, you're chashud in the other things. Our Mishnah deviates from that because the case in our Mishnah is slightly different. The case in our Mishnah is where he's chashud al tarot. We know he doesn't keep tarot. Shvit, Meiser, we're not sure. According to the Braita, he should be chashud. But we have contrary evidence, which is that we see in his house, he practices Shvit. We see that he practices Meiser Sheni. That's why he's believed over here. Rabbi Yanai, v'Rabbi Shmuel Amar, da'ava chashid litar vayu. It was a case where, originally, he was chashud on everything. Va'ata kamei rabbonon, v'kabel litar vayu. He came to the rabbonon, he wanted to do tshuva, and he decided, I'm gonna keep all of these mitzvot. I'm gonna keep the mitzvot of tarot, I'm gonna keep the mitzvot of shvit, and maaser sheni. V'hadar itchashid, achad minayu. And then, he goes back, or he falls back on one of these items. So for instance, the case here of Tarot. He didn't originally keep Tarot. He didn't keep Shvit. He didn't keep Meister Shini. He comes to Rabban and says, I'm ready. I'm going to keep all of them. And he accepts all of them and says, I'm going to do it right. Then we see him still violating the issues with regards to Tarot. So our assumption is, over here, there's reason to believe that the individual is suspect because he started out as being problematic. He tried to rectify it, and now we already see that whatever he claimed he was doing, he's not doing. So that already brings us back to a larger, suspicious approach to his whole Kabbalah, because of the fact that he's already backing away from one of them, we're going to assume he backed away from the other. So in the first answer, Amar Rabbi Loi, he explains that our Mishnah is a unique case. Our Mishnah is different. Normally, a chashud on one thing is chashud on everything. The problem is that our Mishnah doesn't say that. So he says our Mishnah is a unique case because over there we see him in private keeping these mitzvot, so therefore he's believed. The second answer about Rabbi Shmuel says that the Mishnah is koveya, which means if you're chashud on one thing, you're not necessarily chashud on another thing. The Braita is the exceptional case because the Braita is a situation in which he was suspect in the beginning. He was a violator in the beginning. Then he tried to change his ways and then he loses traction or stops keeping one of those mitzvot. Then we assume that he's also doing the same with regards to the other thing because he started out from that position. And therefore the Braita is the exceptional case. Amar Rabba Barbar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Zo Divrei Rabbi Kiva Stimta. Our Mishnah is written by Rabbi Akiva, and it's a Stam Mishnah, I'll leave it to Rabbi Akiva. Rashi brings one interpretation which he rejects, which is that Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. And the Gemara says that all the different Tanaic works, the Stam, the unauthored parts of those Tanaic works, are usually attributed to a specific individual, including Stam Mishnah, Rabbi Meir, Stam Braita, Rabbi Notan. We have a whole list of those items in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And then the Gemara says, V'kulu alibi de Rabbi Akiva. And all of them follow the sheet of Rabbi Akiva, because these are all Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. So maybe that's what the Gemara is saying over here. Zodiri Rabbi Akiva Stimta, because this is a Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir, and Stam Rabbi Meir is a leave it to Rabbi Akiva. Rashi says that's not the case. V'lav Miltahi, that can't be the case. Da'abakama Duchtin Amrinan, because in many places we say Rabbi Menachem Stimta, Rabbi Shimon Stimta, mean other Tanaim we give that attribution to. So if you're going to tell me that it's because everybody was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, and that's why we call it Rabbi Akiva Stimta, then nobody else should have that title. It's a unique aspect of Rabbi Akiva. The fact that the Gemara uses that title or that explanation by other individuals, other Tanaim, means that that's not the meaning over here. But rather, Rashi says is, El Rov Mishnayot Ikabashas Tumot, I'll leave it to Rabbi Akiva, that most of the Mishnayot that are Stam and Shas are following the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. That's what it means. You could argue that it just means over here, that they had indication of the fact that this Mishnah was really the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. Even though it was brought as a Stam Mishnah, they had information, they had other evidence of the fact that it was really Rabbi Akiva's Shita, and not everybody agreed with that Shita, even though Rabbi brought it as a Stam because he wanted the Lacha to go that way. Nevertheless, we know that as attribution. Now, in other places, we see this with Rabbi Yochanan, and then Rabbi Yochanan says that it's a Dat Yochid in that case. Just because we know the author of the Mishnah doesn't necessarily make it into a Dat Yachid. According to the Baal Yitzchak in other places, it only becomes a Dat Yachid if you find other versions of the Mishnah that say Divrei Rabbi Akiva. Then it would become a Dat Yachid. But once it's a Stam Mishnah, just because we know that the position in the Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Akiva, doesn't change the fact that it's a Stam Mishnah and that we would paskin like it, even though it's technically authored by Rabbi Akiva. Rashi is a little more lenient in that manner. That's a Machloket Rashi and Tosafot we saw before. When someone claims that it's a Dat Yachid in the Mishnah, what does that mean? Does that just simply mean they think that, or they have attribution of it in another place? Or does that mean that they literally have in their Mishnah, Divrei Rabbi Akiva? So Tosafot favors that second view, that it has to say Divrei Rabbi Akiva. So over here, we don't have that. He's just saying that the Mishnah follows the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. Ava Chachamim Omrim, Chashuda Ashvit, Chashuda Maser. Chachamim believe if you're Chashud for one thing, you're Chashud in another thing. Man Chachamim. Who are these Chachamim? Rabbi Yehuda. The Ba'atri of Rabbi Yehuda, Shvit Chamir Luhu. Because in the city of Rabbi Yehuda, Shvit was a very serious violation. How do I prove that to you? Because of the following incident. There's one individual who was denigrating his friend and calling him a Dairo Bat Dayarto. A Ger, the son of a Gioret. And that's a big put down because not only was he a Ger, but he was born Shalobik Dusha. His mother was also a Gioret. So he was putting him down in that way. That Ger has the comeback against this guy who's saying that, Amalei, Taitali, at least I, Doloachle Perot Shvit, Kavatech. I don't eat the Perot Shvit like you. Now, eating Perot Shvit, there's no problem with, because you just have to eat them in Dusha. Obviously, it means that either he ate them in a Shamur, or they were Svichim that you're not allowed to eat, or he was doing Skora with them, or he was planting a bunch of wheat. Whatever it is, there's some Isur that was associated, or he wasn't treating them with the proper Kedusha. But you see here that somebody who gave a put-down, that was, you are the Ger, the son of a Gioret, the comeback was, at least I keep Shvit. So you see in their eyes, not keeping Shvit was a serious violation. Now, given that, in the city of Rabbi Yehuda, if you didn't keep Shvit, then you can assume that the person didn't keep other mitzvot as well. Because Shvit was such a serious violation, if you didn't keep Shvit, then we could assume you're not keeping anything. So that's one way to explain the dissenting opinion in the Mishnah, which is, our Mishnah says, if you're Chashud on one, you're not Chashud on the other. Whereas you have here Rabbi Yehuda, who's saying that if you are suspect with regards to one item, then you're suspect with regards to the other item. But that's unique to Rabbi Yehuda, because in Rabbi Yehuda's city, if you were Chashud on Shvit, you were Chashud on everything, because Shvit held such a status within his city. Again, that this position is attributed to Rabbi Akiva. But Chachamim omrim, Chashud al Maser, Chashud al Shvit. But the Chachamim say that if you're Chashud al Maser, you're Chashud al Shvit. This is in the reverse. It's not saying that if you're Chashud al Shvit, you're Chashud al Maser. That we explain according to Rabbi Yehuda. Here you're saying if you're Chashud al Maser, you're Chashud al Shvit. Uman Chachamim. And then who are the Chachamim? Rabbi Meir, it's Rabbi Meir, Damar, Chashud al Dvarachad. Once you're suspect with regards to one item, you're suspect with regards to everything. Then we don't believe that you keep any of the mitzvot once you're suspect with regards to one item. So now, according to this, two fundamental views. There's one fundamental view, which is, if you're chashud on one thing, you're chashud al kol haTorah kula. There's another view, which is, if you're chashud for one thing, you're not chashud for the other items. Those are the two fundamental views. Now, that isn't just as simple as we're saying, because even according to those views that say if you're chashud on one thing, you're not chashud on another thing, we still say that, for instance, the case of Rabbi Yehuda, if a person violates Shvit, we assume that he's going to violate Maaseh Sheni, because Shvit is a very serious violation, so we're assuming he's going to violate something else. So therefore, it's not absolute that if you're chashud for one thing, you're not chashud for the other things. So the poskim, the Ramban, the Rambam, others, when they explain this, say that there are instances where we believe that if you're chashud on one thing, you're chashud on the other. The qualifications for that are, for instance, issues where it's a kal v'chomer, where it's logical that if you violate this, you're certainly going to violate the other thing. Number two, qualification is that it's in the same genre or area of halacha. So for instance here, when you're dealing with shvit and maaser, you both have to do with eating items that are kadosh, items that have a kedusha, that forces you to do something with them, but they're not kadosh to the point where there's a chiyuv mita bidei shamayim or a zar can't eat them. So there is similar genre of violation, and therefore maybe there we can carry from one to the other. So that's why with Rabbi Yehuda, who fundamentally believes that if you're chashud on one thing, you're not chashud on the other thing, he still believes that if you're chashud on shvit, you're chashud on maaseh sheni. Because it's a kal v'chomer. If you violate shvit, you're going to violate maaseh sheni. It's a kal v'chomer. The shvit is more chamor. Plus, they're a similar genre of violation, so it makes a lot of sense that you're going to violate them. Or, for instance, issues like Rabbanon versus Doraita. If you're violating Dinim Doraita, then we're assuming you're going to violate Dinim Derabbanan. That's, again, a logical extension. Even though just because you're chashur on one doesn't mean you're chashur on the other, there's certain areas where it's obvious that if you don't keep this, you're not keeping that. So even according to those that believe that a chashur al davar achad is not chashur on other things, there's still certain items where if you're chashur on one, you are going to be chashur on the other, even though they don't subscribe fully to Rabbi Meir's view that if you're chashur on one thing, you're chashur al kol Torah kula. Our Mishnah is Rabbi Akiva, who says that a chashur al davar achad is not chashur al dvarim achirim. He's the author of our Mishnah. The Braita is either authored by Rabbi Meir, who disagrees fundamentally and says if you're chashur on one thing, you're chashur on another thing, or the Braita is Rabbi Yehuda, who agrees fundamentally that a chashur al davar achad is not chashur on other things, but these are the exceptional cases. So these are places where there's a Kal v'Chomer, it's a similar genre. So these are exceptional cases, and that's why over here he thinks that the din is different, even though B'kol HaTorah Kula, he agrees fundamentally with Rabbi Akiva's view that HaKashur HaDvar HaKad is not HaKashur B'kol HaTorah Kula. Rabbi Yona v'Rabbi Yirmiya Tamidei de-Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Yona and Rabbi Yirmiya, who are the Tamidei of Rabbi Zeira, v'Amri Lo, Rabbi Yona v'Rabbi Zeira, Tamidei de-Rabbi Yochanan. Chad Amar, one of them says, Aval HaChamim Omim HaKashur HaShvi'it, HaKashur Al HaMaser. So one of them says, if you're chashur on shvi'it, then you're chashur on the maser. That was the first version of what we brought before. Uman chachamim, in that case, the chachamim would be Rabbi Yehuda, who means that he agrees fundamentally. He just says, by shvi'it, which is chamor, we have suspicions with regards to maisu sheni. B'chad amar, chashur al maser, chashur al shvi'it. That if you're chashur on maser sheni, then you're chashur on shvi'it. Uman chachamim, then in that case, who are the chachamim? Rabbi Meir. That is Rabbi Meir, who says that if you're suspect with regards to Maaseh Sheni, you're going to be suspect with regards to Shvi'it as well. So again, those are the two different versions that we saw before with regards to the Braita's dissension vis-a-vis our Mishnah. The Tanya, we have a Braita that tells us this is the view of Rabbi Meir. Amaritz, shekibel alav divrei chaverut. And Amaritz, who wants to gain the status of being a chaver, Rashi here quotes the Tosefta, as to what is involved in being a chaver. One is that you don't give chumot to masro to an amaretz, that when you have chumot to masro, you give it to a kohen chaver, and to a levi chaver, you don't give it to an amaretz. You don't do your tarot with an amaretz, in that you do all your processing, all your items, not with an amaretz, so you keep everything bitara. You eat your chulin bitara, even though there's no requirement for that, you have that elevated status, you eat chulin bitara. He takes up my throat from that which he eats of his own produce, that which he sells of his produce he takes up my throat from, and that which he buys he also takes up my throat from it because of the suspicions or the questions as to whether the people who sold it to him took it off. So those are the issues that a chaver is makpid on. So if someone wants to be a chaver, that's this elevated status that they are makpid on these things. These are all chumrot. But they are chumrot that have a basis that the Prushim kept them because it makes sense to keep these items because of the problems that you have if you don't keep these items. And that's why the Chaverim were a band or a group or a brotherhood that were makpid on these issues. So here's an Amaretz who wants to elevate himself to the status of Chaverut. Ben Achshad the Devar Achad. And then we have suspicion in regards to his keeping of one of those items. Nechshad, the Chol HaTorah Kula, Dibri Rabbi Meir. If he's suspect about one of these items, then he's suspect about the Chol HaTorah Kula, Rabbi Meir Shita. That's what we're looking for. This is Rabbi Meir the Shita Tov. When you're violating something, you're suspect in regards to that item. We don't spread it to other things. So now, here the Gemara is going to go bouncing around a little bit, discussing chaverut, which is the status that an amaretz can gain when he elevates himself from amaretz to chaverut, as well as we're going to deal with chashud, which is someone who is suspect of violating real isurim or real violations, as well as gir, and we're going to deal with people who are converts. The common denominator between all these individuals is kabbalah, that they accept upon themselves to practice a certain way, and then we find holes in their practice, we find problems with their practice. So then, what is the ramifications of those violations or those transgressions once we find out about it? So here we have a case where the individual, the Amaretz, accepted to be a chaver, And then we find that he is suspect with regards to some of these matters that he said he's going to be keeping. So Rabbi Meir says that has broader implications with regards to all of his practice now, and he's suspect with Kol HaTorah Kula. Kumim say, he's suspect with regards to this item. We don't extrapolate from that item to other items. It's a decompartmentalized local problem, and that's exactly the way it's going to stay, as a local problem. Hager, shekibel alav divrei Torah. Hager that accepted the Torah, meaning that he's going to keep the mitzvot. Avilu nefshad advar echad, avichashud kol haTorah kula. If he's suspect with regards to one item, then he's suspect the kol haTorah kula, v'yul ki Yisrael mumar. And he has the status like Yisrael mumar, nafkamino, dikadish, kidushav kidushim. If he goes to marry a woman, the kiddushin that he creates are real kiddushin. So over here, the ger crossed over the line to being a ger because he accepted kol haTorah kula. So now he is a ger. He fulfills ger. Then he starts to slip back and he stops keeping a lot of the mitzvot or some of the mitzvot that he accepted when he became a ger. We believe then that once he's already started to violate these items, then we believe nitparta chavila, the whole thing is going to fall apart. So here, there's no attribution of this statement in the Braita to Rabbi Meir, even though before we saw a distinction between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir says, if you're chashur on one thing, you're chashur on tolar Torah kula. Chachamim says, if you're chashur on one thing, that's what you're chashur for. Maybe we would extrapolate it to items that are similar, but we're not going to extend it to kol haTorah kula. Then we have a statement afterwards, which is a ger that accepted kol haTorah kula, and then we find that he is violating some of the Isurim. Then we say that he's considered to be an Yisrael Mumar, and he's not trustworthy anymore. He's still in Yisrael because he converted. Once you're a Jew, you're a Jew. You can't get rid of that. So his status as a Jew will remain as like an Yisrael Mumar, which means that if he goes to marry a woman, it's Kiddushin or Tofes, and you have to get a get in order to unwind them. It's not like a goy trying to create Kiddushin, which he can't do. Here in this latter half over here, the Breita doesn't give the attribution to Rabbi Meir. So it could be that it is just Rabbi Meir's Shita. The Breita doesn't mention it. But it's possible that it's also the Shita of the Chachamim. And that is because a ger is different. A ger is coming from a position where he didn't keep any of these mitzvot. And then he has a kabbalah. Now he has an acceptance of the mitzvot. The problem is, once it starts to unwind, there's a high likelihood that he's going back to his old ways. So going back to his old ways, then he's not keeping anything, not just not keeping this one thing. And therefore, when we see him starting to slide away from the kabbalah that he made, then we will have a broader suspicion that this individual is going back to his previous practices and not just violating this one item. So that might be even possible according to the Chachamim's position, not just according to Rabbi Meir. Tanu Rabbanan, Hagabal Kabel Divrei Chaverut, Chutz Mi Dvar Echad. Person comes to accept being a Chaver, practicing like a Chaver, but he says, I'll do everything except that one thing. I'm not going to, that one thing bothers me. I don't like that one thing, or I don't believe in that one thing. You don't accept him. It's an all or nothing package. Either you are a chaver or you're not a chaver. You're not a partial chaver. Either you do it or you don't do it. A ger that's coming to convert, to accept the Torah. And he says, with the exception of one item, I'm going to keep the whole Torah. I just don't like that one item. That one mitzvah is not for me. I'm not going to keep it. Then, ein mikablin oto. We do not accept a ger like that. In both these cases, ein mikablin oto. That's not an acceptable form of acceptance kabbalah. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yomer, afilu dikdech echad midivrei sofrim. Even one minor din derabonon, if he says I'll accept everything, b'kol haTorah kula, with the exception of that one din derabonon, ein mikablin oto. We don't accept a ger in that case. B'chein bein levi, also a Levi, Shabbat Kabel Divrei Leviyah, who wants to come to accept the practices of the Vihim. The Kohen, Shabbat Kabel Divrei Kuhuna, or a Kohen who comes to accept the practices of a Kohen, quotes me the Varachad, with the exception of one item, Ein Mikablin Oto, we don't accept him, Shnemar, because the Pasuk says, the Makriv et Dam HaShlamim, the one who is Makriv the Dam HaShlamim, they get the Matnot Kuhuna, HaVodah HaMesura L'Bnei Aron. The avodah is given specifically to Bnei Aaron to carry out. Kol kohen sheinu modeh ba ein lo chelek b'kuhuna. Any kohen who doesn't agree with that, meaning he doesn't believe in the avodah, he doesn't see purpose in the avodah, he thinks the avodah is for whatever reason not either real, not what Hashem wanted, not something that he believes in, then he doesn't get a chelek in the kuhuna. He's not entitled to the matnot kihuna. It's an interesting latter part of the Braita here because Kohen and Levi are born that way. What type of Kabbalah do they need? We don't have any requirements that a Kohen accept to be a Kohen or a Levi accept to be a Levi. When he's born a Kohen, we assume he's going to do the practices of a Kohen. When he's born a Levi, we assume that he's going to do the practices of a Levi. So in all likelihood, what we're speaking about here is a case where the individual started to not practice these items or somehow is making statements about these items that he doesn't believe in them. Or the person's taking an active position that they don't want to do the practices of a Kohen or Levi. Because in other places we see that we compel them to do the job of a Kohen, do the job of a Levi. So then, when he comes to then rectify that situation, he needs to accept upon himself that he's going to keep all the matters with regards to Kuna. All the matters with regards to a Levi. Levi, who wants to get Maaser Rishon, has got to be a practicing Levi. A practicing Levi involves a number of items, including Shoer, Shorer, serving the Kohanim. He's the person who closes the gates. People who do the singing in the Mikdash. People who are in service or right-hand men to the Kohanim. Those are all jobs or responsibilities of the Levi. And in order to be classified as a Levi, he has to accept all of those responsibilities. If they are refusing to do the job, then they might need a separate Kabbalah because of their previous refusals. If he wants to accept only some of them, then he's not going to be classified as a Levi. But again, it has to be someone already who lost their nemanut or lost their consideration with regards to these matters because they didn't believe in them, they didn't act upon them, they weren't doing it. And now they're trying to come back and have a Kabbalah, because otherwise you wouldn't be a suspect of a Levi that he's not doing what the Levi is supposed to do. Why would you all of a sudden just think that? Why does he need a Kabbalah? Same thing by the Kuna. Going to get the matnot, whether it's the matnot of the Kodoshim, or the matnot of the Gvulin, then he has to be a practicing Kohen. That means that he has to be someone who believes in the Avoda, someone who believes in the Kohuna. And if he doesn't, then he can't get these matnot. Again, it has to be a case where there's a reason to believe that he doesn't agree or he doesn't think that these things are real. And now he's trying to accept it. If he comes to accept it with an exception of an item, that does not work. He's not classified as a Kohen. He's not classified as a Levi in that case. Now, one of the important statements here, which plays a pivotal role in one of the major issues in Israel today, which is that when a ger comes to convert, he must accept upon himself all of the mitzvot. If he decides he can accept all the mitzvot, the exception of any mitzvah, we don't accept him. So first of all, you have an issue with the Gemara in Shabbat on Daf Lamed Aleph, where Hillel HaZaken converts an individual. He says, I just want to keep Torah Shebichtav. And Hillel was willing to accept him as a ger, even though he didn't accept Torah Shebaal Peh, he didn't accept large parts of the Torah. Forget about Dinei Derabanan or Chumrot Derabanan, Tiktukei Sofrim. He didn't keep some Doraitot that are associated with Torah Shebaal Peh. So how did Hillel accept him as a ger? Rashi over there writes that Hillel knew that he was going to accept Torah Shebaal Peh. He knew that this individual was just working towards it. He was a genuine ger, and that he really was going to accept Torah Shebaal Peh. And that's why he converted him, knowing that in the end he would accept Torah Shebaal Peh as well. But otherwise, we wouldn't have accepted such an individual. Or that Hillel accepted him conditionally, and then once he proved that he was going to keep the other things, that's when he was Megayir him. The other way to deal with it is that the individual is accepted when they make a declaration of acceptance. That acceptance has to be simply that, a positive statement. As long as they don't make a negative statement, then we're going to accept them. In the case of Hillel HaZaken, maybe the individual says, I want to convert, I'm going to keep all Kol HaTorah Shebichtav. He never says, I'm not going to keep Torah Shebaal Peh. He just says, I'm going to keep Torah Shebichtav. So for there, he doesn't specify specifically something he's not going to keep. Maybe that's enough to allow him to become a ger. So that's an issue, again, with regards to Kabbalat HaMitzvot. The real pivotal question is, how central is Kabbalat HaMitzvot to the Gerut process? Meaning that, do you have to accept the Mitzvot in order to be a ger? But Moshe Feinstein has an unusual statement. This is in the Igud Moshe Yoredeya, Chelek Gimel, Siman Kuf Yud Bet. Shlechora, Kabbalat HaMitzvot, Eino Me'etzem Maseh HaGerut. They're not a part of the fundamentals of conversion. There's no source for that in the Gemara of Kabbalat HaMitzvot. Ela Nira, the Kabbalat HaMitzvot, Eino Maseh HaGerut. It's not part of the conversion. E'aval, Misha Lo Kibel Mitzvot, Lo Chokshar La'asot Ger. Someone who does not accept the mitzvot is not ra'ui to be a convert. I mean, it's a prerequisite. You don't convert people unless they're willing to accept the mitzvot. V'savrei atosvot rak ze sheyach the Beit Din. And Tosva believes that's only valid in Beit Din. It kadesh ol ravzu, tish zev ishavzu, kisherim lasot gerim. You need a Beit Din to paskin and say, these people are valid or ready to be gerim. Because you need three, shloshat, and mishpat tibbe. Because the Gemara brings a source from a pasuk of mishpat. A mishpat requires three. But it's not a part of the gerut, it's a prerequisite for the gerut. We only convert individuals who are people who are going to keep mitzvot. So before they come to do their conversion, you need a Beit Din to basically stamp and say that they have kabbalat mitzvot, lachain. Kishikibel mitzvot b'fnei gimel, b'gamze gufa lamul v'litvol morim lo shu kasher lasot ger. This individual who's going to accept the mitzvot before gimel, and then he's going to do mila, tfila, then we say this person is ra'oi to be a ger. Since he's following the instructions of Beit Din, once he's accepted the mitzvot, that already clears him to be a ger. So the whole need for Beit Din is to testify to the fact that this person is going to be willing to be mekabel the mitzvot, because that makes him ra'oi to be a ger. But it's not fundamental to the gerut itself. What probably is driving Rav Moshe Feinstein over here is the Rambam's formulation in Hilchot Yisrei Biyah, where in the 13th and the 14th Parakim, he discusses Gerut. And that's the context in which it is written. Formulation of the Rambam is, V'chein Dorot, Kshirtza Ha'akum Li'kanes Labrit, when a goy wants to join the covenant, the East of Faith, Taka Kanfei Shechina, to be under the wing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'kabel Alav Ol Torah, and he wants to accept the Old Torah, Tzarich Milah, Tfilah, Vartzat, Korban. So now, he doesn't formulate it that he will be Mekabel the Torah. It means that that's part of what is needed in order for someone to be Ra'oi, to be a Ger, is that he wants to join the covenantal family. He wants to accept all the mitzvot. These are all items that are prerequisites to the Gerut. This is what drives, or the driving force of the ger. If those are there, then we convert the individual. If they're not there, we don't convert the individual. But obviously, that's not always what happens. And that's the Rambam brings over here in Perek Gimel, Halach Yudat Tedvav, that we see. Al yaleh adatcha, sheshimshon ha-moshiyat Yisrael, o shlomo ha-melech Yisrael, shenikra ni-yidid Hashem, nasu nashim nachriyot v'geyutan. Did they really marry foreign women? Meaning that Shimshon, he marries a plishti. And Shlomo Melech marries all these women, including Bat Paro. Elosoda davar kachu. This is the secret. Shamitzvah nechona kushevo ger o gioret leitkayer. When a goy comes to convert, both kimacharav, we check. Shema biglam mamon chito obishvil srara shizkela. Maybe it's because of money reasons. Maybe it's because of power. Or maybe pnei pachad or fear. Bali kines ledat. We look for ulterior motives. V'mishu bodkim acharav shemei nam natan b'isha yehudit. He's a male. We worry about the fact that he's looking to marry a Jewish woman. V'mishahi, if it's a female, bodkim shemei nam natan b'bachur mi b'chorei Yisrael. Maybe she wants to marry a Jewish guy. Im lo nitzalem ayala. If we don't find any ulterior motives that are associated with their gerud, Modin otan kovet ol Torah v'torach sheish be'asiyata alamei ratzot kadei sheifreshu. We tell them about the difficulties of accepting the Torah, the yoke of the Torah, the difficulties of keeping the Torah, how the regular people find it very difficult. Im kiblu, if they accept it v'lo pirshu and they don't run away, v'ra'u otan shechazru me'ava mekablin otan. If you see that they act me'ava, then we accept them. So you see again here this idea that the Kabbalat HaMitzvot is the trigger that says we're going to perform the conversion here. But absent that prerequisite, we're not going to enter into the world of conversion. Meaning, if a person is just converting to marry, that's not a valid reason to convert. That's what the Rambam says over here. If someone's coming just because they like a Jewish girl, they like a Jewish guy, that conversion is not a valid reason to convert them. But that does have other ramifications, which is, if it's only a prerequisite and not part of the gerut itself, what happens when people don't follow that law? And they convert people, even though they're converting for ulterior motives. How do we view such gerim? How do we view those converts, which is part of the big problem today? So then, in Halacha Tetvav, it says here, Lefikach, lo kiblu beitin gerim koimei David v'shlomo. That's why the Gemara says this, that we don't accept Gerim when the Jewish nation is ascended. If you want to join the Jewish nation when we're downtrodden, That's a real ger. Then we know that your motives are not for anything good. But when it's time of David HaMelech or Shlomo HaMelech and you're coming to convert, it's very suspect why you're coming to convert. B'nei David, Shem HaMina Pachad Chazru. Right, David HaMelech was the great conqueror. Maybe out of fear they're converting. B'nei Shlomo Shabbat B'Shvil HaMalchut HaTova V'Hagdolah. They're coming because things are good for the Jews. They have great empire. Shehu B'Yisrael Chazru. That's why they're coming. Shekol HaChozer Min HaKum B'Shvil Dovar Mehet Le'olam Eino Migeri HaTzedek. Someone who converts for what other ulterior motives, he's not called a ger tzedek. There were many converts. Despite the fact that you're not allowed to convert them, there were converts anyway. And there were many gerim during the time of David and Shlomo who were converted by hedjotot, by lay people. Beitin or batidinim made up of three people that were not smuchim, not qualified necessarily. People who were hedjotot that are converting them. Vayu beitin agadol choshishim lahem. And the beitin agadol, which were the qualified individuals, they were suspect. Lo dochim otam achar shetavlu. We don't push them away after they already went to the mikveh and they converted. Mikom makom lo mikarvim otam. We don't bring them close. Ad shetireh acharitan. Until we see what their end game is, or what is really going to happen with them. We have like a probationary period where we see what happens with regards to them. And then the Rambam continues, Lufi, Shigier, Shlomo, Nashimu, Nisan. Shlomo converted women and then married them. Bechen Shimshon, Gier, Vinasa. He converted a woman and married her. But Davar Yedua, Shalom Chazru, Eluel, Bishvil, Davar. They only converted because of whatever the reasons were. They certainly weren't because of the mitzvah, they were ulterior motives. Velo Alpi, Beitin, Gairum, Chashavana, Katuv, Kilu, Ein Hakum. Because they were not converted by a real Beitin, they were considered like non-Jews, ubi suran omdim, and they stayed with their former ways. In the end, their behaviors reflect on what their real motives were. Because that's what it says at the end of the reign of Shlomo HaMelech, that his wives, and then Shlomo HaMelech, start to worship Avodah Zarah. So the Rambam over here has two categories of Geirim. There's a category of a ger tzedek. That's someone who's a true ger. That's a person who comes mi'ahava, that comes and converts for real, unadulterated motives, which is that they want to join the covenantal family. They want to keep the mitzvot. That's the only reason that they're coming. Listo feit tachat katfei shechina. That's a ger tzedek. That's really the prerequisite for initiating a gerut. That's what Rav Moshe says over there. The Rambam seems to be saying the same thing. Once we know that about the individual, then we proceed with the procedures of Geirut. But we know that there are Geirim that convert for ulterior motives. We would not do that. But unfortunately, there are people who do it. There are Batidinim Shel Hedyotot. The Rambam says when those conversions happen, they're not automatically invalid. The Geirut, the conversion goes through, but the person's really in a probationary stage, and we're suspect about what they're going to do. Are they really going to keep it and follow through on it, or are they going to fall away from it? And the Rambam says that our response to them is quid pro quo for what their behavior is, which is if they continue to practice and act like a full-fledged practicing Jew, then we'll accept them as real gerim. If, on the other hand, they don't, and they start to fall away from the practice, then we don't consider them to be gerim. But that might be what the Gemara is speaking about over here, that you have this idea that you have gerim that are like Israel mumarim. They converted. In the end, they are gerim. They're just not gerim tzedek. And so then you have this slew of individuals who are considered to be gerim, even though they're not gerim tzedek. And Rav Moshe has a number of other tshuvot with regards to conversions that are being performed by either inappropriate batei dinim, or even, he says, people who know better and are halakhically following individuals, and they're converting these people, even though it's pretty clear that they have ulterior motives. So then what is the status of those individuals after the conversion? That's what Rav Moshe is trying to deal with. Do we classify them as being someone who is a Jew? Or do we not consider them as a Jew? Obviously, that's major nafkamino to the children that are born from such a wedlock, which creates huge issues. And that's what he's trying to deal with. Whether you have a conversion bidyavad. Does it work bidyavad? Or does it not work bidyavad? Part of that is how you read the Rambam. When the Rambam says they converted, and then he says if they go off the path, then we consider them like non-Jews. Does that mean we consider them like non-Jews? Meaning like an Yisrael Mumar? Or are they really non-Jews and the Gerut never went through? Retroactively, it was an invalid Gerut. So that's really some of the controversy that surrounds the conversions today, which is that many of the people basically fake it to convert, and they know full well they're not going to do accept the mitzvot in the end, or in the end they do the conversion, but then they start to fall away from the practice. What does that mean with regards to the Gerut itself? And other individuals who clearly have no intention of keeping the mitzvot ever, and they're converting either for marriage or because they, for instance today, they made Aliyah in the 90s along with the great Soviet Aliyah. They're not Jewish. They're part of the Jewish nation. They serve in the army. They're part of the Jewish culture, and they want to join the Jewish family. They just want to join like the rest of the Jews in Israel that are chilonim. That's what they believe it means to be Jewish. They're not really doing it for ulterior motives. They're doing it for real motivation. They want to be a part of the Jewish nation. But to them, being part of the Jewish nation doesn't mean to be a practicing Jew. So that's, again, another issue with regards to conversions. Do you convert such people or do you not convert such people? What's the meaning of a conversion of some individual like that? That's all influenced by the Gemara here that says if you have a Kabbalat mitzvot that it leaves anything out, that's a serious problem and it's not considered to be a Kabbalat mitzvot. What does that do to the Gerut? That's obviously a serious question. And then you have the other Gemarot in Yevamot deal with these issues of people convert for ulterior motives as to whether they're classified or not classified as Gerim. That's all part of this bigger picture, but this little line here has a big impact on the issue of conversion as a whole. Tan Rabbanan, Aba the Kabel Divrei Chaverut, person who comes to accept the Chaverut on himself, Im Reinu Shnoheg Betzina Betoch Beto, if we see that he practices such in his house, Mikablinoto, then we accept him. V'achakach Mlamdimoto, then afterwards we teach him the laws. V'imlav, if that's not the case, Mlamdimoto, V'achakach Mikablinoto, then we teach him the laws first, and then accept him. We accept him, and then he learns on the job. It seems to be, and it's going to come up more clearly in the upcoming Gemara, that we need some sort of probationary time period. We need to know that the person's really serious about keeping the chaverut. So the machloket in the Braita is, do we need evidence in front of us that this person is really intending to do this? And that evidence is that we see him keeping it in private, not just in public. He's not just doing it to save face. He really means it because he's keeping it even when he's at home. So when he keeps it at home, if we see evidence of that, then we allow him to become a chaver, and then we teach him whatever he doesn't know. He doesn't know anything yet, or he started to practice it, but he wasn't well-versed in the matters. So when we see that he's already beginning to practice it, we say, looks like he's genuine, let's bake him into a chaver, and then we'll teach him the rest. But if we don't have any evidence, maybe we don't accept him at all, until we have that evidence. Mishum HaYochai is of a differing opinion. If someone's genuine and comes and wants to accept chaverut on him, we accept them, whether we know or don't know they're practicing. Then we teach them and we see what's happening. So there is this idea that if you are coming and expressing an interest in doing this, and we believe that you genuinely want to do it, we don't expect you to know it all beforehand. We expect you to know some of it beforehand, but as long as you're genuine and you're going to practice it, then we assume that you'll follow the instructions that we give you afterwards, and you can learn on the job, in a sense, to be a chaver. Now that's true here by chaverut, that's not necessarily true by gerut. By gerut, you need to have a certain, mass of mitzvot that you really understand. The Rambam, when he says it, he doesn't say you have to teach him all the mitzvot, but you have to teach him the major mitzvot, the major mitzvot, or mitzvot that are very difficult. Give them a flavor of what it's like. So that's a similar type of idea, that they accept the mitzvot that we've taught them, but obviously they know that they don't know everything and that they're going to learn more on the job. But we do accept them if they're making a genuine effort to lead in that direction. Tan Rabbanan, amikablim leknafayim, v'achakach mikablim leta'arot. So it's an interesting idea here. Knafayim, as Rashi knows over here, refers to netilat yadayim, the practice to wash one's hands for chulin because of srach truma. So if an individual chaver comes along and says, I'm going to do the netilat yadayim, I'm not doing the tarot, or I'll do the tarot later on. So then we accept him. V'yamar, eni me'a kabela leknafayim. If he says, I'm only going to accept netilat yadayim, mekablino to. So either you can accept the netilat yadayim, and then the tarot in a process, and that's acceptable. Or if he says, I only want netilat yadayim, not tarot, that's also an acceptable form of Kabbalah. Kibel tarot, below kibel knafayim. On the other hand, if he accepts for tarot, meaning the more stringent items, but not the knafayim, af tarot lo kibel. Even for tarot, he's not accepted for. So what we see here is that there is a process by which if an individual comes along and says, I'm going to do the Netiyat Yadayim thing, and then later on I'll do the Tarot, we accept him. We understand that it's difficult. We understand that it's a process. So if he says, I'm going to work through the process, and I'm going to take the easier thing first, and then the other thing afterwards, we're willing to work with him on that matter. On the other hand, if it's vice versa, he says, I'll take the harder thing, but not the simpler thing, that's exactly what the problem is that we saw above. Above, we saw that when you accept, with the exception of one mitzvah, it doesn't work. That's the case here. This person is not going through a process. This person is not going to do this because he doesn't believe in it. It's not something that's difficult, but he just doesn't want to do it. That case, we don't accept him at all. So again, if it's in the process of learning or increasing one's adherence to these mitzvot, then we accept it, even though he doesn't accept everything. Others suggest that this is not about chavirut. It's about whether the person is neman with regards to this matter in particular. Or Rashi says that we're not talking about a full item that he didn't accept upon himself. Before, when we said that he accepted chavirut, with the exception of an item, he didn't accept one whole item. Over here, he's not accepting one whole item, because by the mere fact that he's doing Netilat Yadayim already shows that he's makbir on chulin b'tahara, because Netilat Yadayim is done with chulin. So that shows that he didn't disregard or discard any one whole item, and that's why it's acceptable over here. On the other hand, if he accepting everything with the exception of something that's not so difficult, then we have suspicions about his whole motivation and whether he's going to keep anything at all, and we don't accept him. Tana Rabbanan, ad kama mikablim oto. How long until we accept him? We'll see in Rashi in one second what that means. Beit Shammai omeim le mashkin 30 yom, leksut 12 chodesh. For mashkin we need 30 days. For clothing, we need 12 months. Doesn't matter whether it's liquids or clothing, you need 12 months. Sounds like then that Beit Shammai is the kula, and Beit Hillel is the chumra, if you say it that way. And we don't find this amongst the list of items in Ediot where Beit Shammai is the kula. So it must be that Beit Hillel thinks that for both of them you need 30 days. Now, as Rashi says over here, "Ad mekama mekablim oto divrei chaverut shenekablenu la'altar v'nachzika bechaver." The person comes before us and wants to be a chaver, and how much time does he have to accept that he's going to practice like a chaver? What's the minimum threshold of time where we'll declare him a chaver immediately? If he says, for instance, next 30 days I'm going to do all this stuff, so do we accept him immediately if he says he's going to do it in the next 30 days? So that's exactly what Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel are arguing about. What is the duration of time that you need to accept in order for us to immediately believe that you intend to do this and that we will keep you? So if he says, I'm coming to accept Divrei Chaverut ad 30 yom, I'm going to keep him for 30 days, we believe him that he'll do that, and become Eilech. Even after that point in time, prospectively, we believe him in Tarot Mashkim Shetumatan Kala. We did him with Tumat Mashkim, which is only a Din Derabonon. It's a lighter form of Tumah. Over there, if he accepts it for 30-day duration, then we believe him. The Ksut, if you want his clothing to have a classification of a Chaver, which the Gemara and Chagiga deals with in the Mishnayot there, the clothing of an Am Haaretz for a Chaver has the Tumat Midras, meaning that there are all these levels of Tumah where people of a higher level of Tahara, the clothing of the other party is suspect or problematic for them. But to gain that elevated status with regards to his clothing, that's a much more difficult undertaking. There he has to accept it for 12 months before we believe that he's really intending to do this and that he's going to continue to practice in this manner. So that's one way that Rashi explains it, that this is how long, what is the duration of which you need to accept in order for us to immediately declare you a chaver and to believe that even after that time elapses that you'll continue to practice like that. So that's the minimums that we're speaking about here. Then Rashi brings Lishna Achrina, Ad Kama Mekablin Oto. This goes back to what I was mentioning before. If the person's already practicing privately, how much time does it need to be a practicing privately in order for us to accept him immediately? And that's what this Braita is speaking about. According to those that say you need to practice in private before we accept you, what's the minimum amount of time we need to see you practicing privately before we'll accept you? So that's the second way that the Rashi explains it. The Rambam actually brings a third way, which to me would be the most likely or easiest reading of the Gemara, which is that it's a probationary time. How long are you on probation once we accept you as a chaver? How long do we need to be suspect that you may not or may be a chaver? So again, for Hashkim, it's 30 days. You're on probation for 30 days. We look after you. We check up on you for the 30 days. If you complete that probationary period, then we accept that you're a chaver, and unless we find evidence to the contrary, we're going to assume that you are keeping the chaverut. Same thing with the ksut. 12 months. You need on probation for 12 months. There we check up on you. We look after you. We make sure that you're keeping all these items. After you've already demonstrated for 12 months and you're out of probation, we assume that you're believed until there's reason to believe otherwise. So that would mean, ad kama mekablim oto, is how long is your probationary period according to the Rambam. Tana banan, habal lekabel divrei chavirut, tzurich lekabel bifnei shlosha chavirim. Someone who comes to accept the chavirut, he has to do it in front of three chavirim. Ubanav, ubnai bnei to, enim tzurichim lekabel bifnei shlosha chavirim. The remainder of his family does not need to accept it in front of these chaverim. His acceptance includes himself and all of his family members. Rishimon Gamliel Omer, apanav ubnei to, tzurichim lekabel bifnei shlosha chaverim. Rishimon Gamliel says, every individual has got to take their own acceptance. Just because he's accepting it doesn't mean that his family is buying into this. And if his family doesn't buy into this, you have a problem. So if you want them to be chaverim, each individual has to have a kabbalah of chaverut. There's nothing like a chaver that is accepting to a ben chaver. Someone who's the son of a chaver who accepted it. Now, the truth is, the ben chaver never did accept it. What it means is that someone who grew up in a house of chaverim, then it's very different than someone who's starting from scratch to become a chaver. So the first explanation Rashi brings is that, obviously, the person who accepted the chaverut is going to be much more machbid on the chaverut than someone who didn't. And there's a difference between a chaver that accepted versus a ben chaver who wasn't accepting it, or the ben chaver himself was one who accepted it. So when you're the accepting party, you're much more makpid on it than someone who's not. And that would be the explanation why Rabbi Shimon Gamliel wants the family to accept it as well, in order to get it to the point where that acceptance is the driving force for the whole family. Rashi brings a lishna achrina, which says it's not an explanation for Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, rather an explanation for the Tanakama. Why is it that the family doesn't need a separate acceptance? Because there's a big difference between a chaver that accepts to a son of a chaver that accepts. Ben chaver is not chashud. The son of a chaver who grows up in the house of a chaver is not really someone who we suspect is not going to keep the practices. And therefore, we believe that if the chaver already took it upon himself to do this, then the family is going to follow suit because they grew up in an environment that has this as part of their environment. And so they don't need a separate acceptance because the acceptance of their father is going to drive the practices of the household. And the practice of the household will be influential in how this person views it. And therefore you don't need a separate acceptance. Their acceptance is by the mere fact that that is their normal practice and that's what they grew up with. And that's why the Tanakhama says that the family doesn't need it because the family will grow into the chaverut. They won't need a specific acceptance in order to practice that way. Tanu banan, haba lekabel divrei chaverut. Someone who comes to accept chaverut has to do it in front of three chaverim. And even a talmid chacham has to accept to be a chaver. A person's already elderly and is already sitting in the yeshiva for many years. He's the Rosh Yeshiva. He's teaching in the yeshiva. He doesn't need to do that. Because he already did that when he entered into the yeshiva, he already accepted it then. Even a talmid chacham doesn't need to get accepted in front of three chaverim. Others can accept it in front of him. So the question is, how separate an institution is chaverut from being a talmid chacham? What's clear here is that not every chaver is a talmid chacham, but every talmid chacham is a chaver. So that's clear. Only question is, does the Talmud Chacham have to accept separately the institution of Chaverut? Or by definition, if he's a Talmud Chacham, he's going to practice like a Chaver. That's basically the fundamental machloket here, as to whether a Talmud Chacham needs to accept the Chaverut. Is it a completely separate institution, and therefore he has to accept it, even though he is a Talmud Chacham? Or is it default? If you're a Talmud Chacham, then by definition, you're also a Chaver. You don't need a particular acceptance in order to be a Chaver. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, b'mei b'nov shel Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonos, nishneit mishnah zu. This Mishnah, which has this opinion that Talmidei Chachamim need to accept the Chaverut, that was taught in the time of the son of Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonos. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, istapek lehu milta, b'tarot. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda had a problem with some matter in Tarot. Shadur Rabbonon, the gabei b'nov shel Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonos. So they sent a pair of Rabbanon to go inquire of Rabbi Hanina ben Antigonus with regards to this matter. Aslu, Amro le Laenba. They came and presented the issue to the son of Rabbi Hanina ben Antigonus, and they said to him, can you look into this matter? Ashpechu de katayin tohorot, or kanatar tohorot. We saw that he was guarding his tohorot, meaning that he was sitting there to make sure that his tohorot were really tohor. Otiv rabbonan mitidei legabayu. He didn't want to leave his tarot when these Rabbanan were sitting around. In essence, he didn't trust these Rabbanan with regards to the issues of Chaverut. So he brought his own people in, brought two of his own people in to sit with these two Chachamim that came in order to make sure that his tarot were still tarot. And then he went off to look into the matter. Atu Amr Le the Rabbi Yossi, these two Chachamim who went as emissaries to a son of Rabbi Hanina ben Antigonus in order to inquire of him as to his opinion, Amar lohu, Rabbi Yehuda says to these to Chachamim, Aviv shazeh bizeh tamid Chachamim, afu mevezeh tamidei Chachamim. Just like his father denigrated tamidei Chachamim, so too he denigrates tamidei Chachamim. Rashi says we have no evidence of the fact that Rabbi Hanina ben Antigonus denigrated tamidei Chachamim. It was just derech melitza. It was just a statement that Rabbi Yehuda is making. This guy doesn't treat the Tamidei Chachamim right. Must be his father didn't treat them right. Just a statement, not anything of fact, but just a way to indicate how upset he was about the situation. Tosafot seems to indicate, thinks that there is another incident that took place where Rabbi Hanina ben Antigonus also denigrated or mistreated the Tamidim of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. So Amar lo Rabbi Yossi, kvod zakeni emunach bimkama. Don't put down his father, Rabbi Hanina ben Antigonus. He should be in place. Ela. But from the day the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Kohanim take upon themselves extra chumrot with regards to Taharot. They don't let anybody deal with Taharot, even if they are Chaverim. Meaning that there's like this super class of Chaverim. There's regular Chaverim, and then there's the Kohanim Chaverim, which keep this extra level of Tahara. Rabbi Hanina ben Antigonus is a Kohen, and therefore his son was, as a Kohen, practicing this extra level of Tara. So even though the Tamidei Chachamim might have been classified as Chaverim, he still didn't trust them because of this added level of stringency which the Kohanim keep. And that's why he placed his people there to guard them and make sure that they didn't come in contact with his Tarot, even though they were Chaverim. The idea, what the Gemara is suggesting is, that Braita that says Tamidei Chachamim have to accept Bipnei Shlosha was said in the time of the son of Rabbi Hanina ben Antigonus, who didn't treat Chachamim automatically as if they were Chaverim. So that's the idea of the story. That seems to be what Rabbi Yehuda thinks in the end also, that Rabbi son of Rabbi Hanina ben Antigonus does not think that Tamidei Chachamim automatically qualify as Chaverim. Whereas Rabbi Yossi is more on the lines of Dan Lekaf Skolot for Rabbi son of Rabbi Hanina ben Antigonus and say that he was unusual. He only did that because he was a Kohen and he was Mohek this extra Chumrah. But not because he fundamentally believes that Chachamim are not Chaverim. And therefore, it's not necessarily true that he is the figurative author of that position in the Braita. Maybe it's not true. Maybe this is a unique case with regards to the son of Rabbi Hanina ben Antigonus. Tanu Banan, Chaver Shemait, Chaver that passes away, Ishto Banav, Ubnei Beito, Arein Bechezkatan. His wife, his family, they retain the status of Chaverut that they had while he was alive. Aji Yechshedu. Until we find reason to be suspect or until their suspicions arise about their behavior. B'chein, chatzer shemokrim ba tchelet, an area where they sell tchelet and they're certified as having tchelet and not kalailan, which is the indigo, the replacement that looked like tchelet and was sold because it was much cheaper and easier to make and people sold it as a fake for tchelet. Ayub b'chatzkatat, shitipasel, it remains in that standing unless we find evidence to the contrary. So once something gets a shame of chaverut, or a shame here of tchelet, that remains in place even after the death of the individual who was the original individual who created that environment. Nevertheless, we assume that practice of that individual will continue on after, even at post his death, because that's the way that everybody grew up there, that's the way everybody behaved there. And there's no reason to believe that they would deviate from that behavior. Tanu Banan, Eshet Amaretz, Shenisei Lechaver, a wife of an Amaretz, who then either divorced, her husband passed away, now marries a chaver, became bitoshal amaretz, and say the chaver. Or a chaver that marries the daughter of an amaretz, became amadoshal amaretz, shenim kada chaver, or an evik nani of an amaretz that was sold to a chaver, kulan tzrichim lekabel divrei chaverut b'tchila. Each of these individuals coming from scratch needs to accept chaverut. Aval, in the reverse, Eshet chaver shenisayed am haaretz. The wife of a chaver, where her divorced her husband, or her husband passed away and now marries a am haaretz. Bitosho chaver nisayed am haaretz. Or the daughter of a chaver that marries an am haaretz. Okay, abdosho chaver shenimkal am haaretz. Or the eved kanani of a chaver that was sold to an am haaretz. Ein shrichin lekabel divrei chaverut bitchila. They don't need to accept the divrei chaverut because their previous practice is enough to say that they continue to practice in such a manner. Rashi claims it's a situation in which they come back into the area of a chaver. While they're under the auspices of the Amaretz, we don't expect them to be chaverim. But rather, when they come back to marry or be under the auspices of a chaver, then we believe that they will return to their original practices of chaverut. Although, from the Rambam, it sounds like even in their new situation under the Amaretz, they will continue to be chaverim. In the period that they have yet to be influenced or under the auspices of the Amaretz for a long time, we classify them or consider them to continue to be chaverim because they'll continue the old practices until they're sufficiently influenced by their new environment. Rabbi Meir Omer, Afin Shrichim Lekabel Aleihem, Divrei Chaverut L'Chatchila. Rabbi Meir disagrees and says they do have to accept it because the mere fact that they're going to marry such an individual or they're entering into the household of such an individual already casts aspersions on their chaverut. And therefore they need a full acceptance in order for it to be the fact that we still consider them or classify them as a chaverim. Shimon ben Elazar, Omer Mishum Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says in the name of Rabbi Meir, Maseh Bishachat. We have an incident or a case with a woman. She married the chaver. And she used to tie the tefillin on his arm. She used to help him put on his tefillin. Afterwards, her husband passed away, got divorced. She marries an amaretz. And she was tying the tax receipts onto his arm. He was a tax collector. And we know that rove tax collectors are considered to be gazlanim. So he's not a good person necessarily. And she was now tying on the receipts to his arm. Or in essence, she took on the mold of whomever she was married to. So when she was married to a chaver, she acted like the wife of a chaver. She married to an amaretz. She acted like the wife of an amaretz. So this story of Rabbi Shimon Elazar, named Rabbi Meir, is supportive of Rabbi Meir's contention that we need you to accept it because a chaver that is going to go into the family of an amaretz, the practices that they had before are going to fall by the wayside and they're going to take on the color and practices of the new household. So when the aged chaver now goes to marry an amaretz, we don't believe that she's necessarily going to continue to be a chaver even after she gets married to the amaretz. And therefore, she needs a specific acceptance to maintain that status. Because otherwise we see that she takes on the form of whoever she's married to. Okay, we'll stop here at the bottom of Lamed Amud Bet.